Hey ladies, welcome to the Love Your Journey podcast. My name is Roseanne Austin. I am a coach and mentor to professional women all over the world who are struggling with fertility. I help them move beyond fear and frustration into hope and boundless confidence so they can love their lives no matter what. Having personally lived this journey while I was a successful trial lawyer, I know exactly how this journey can turn your world upside down. The good news is that you can tame this beast and you don't have to do it alone. I'm here to inspire you with honest talk and practical strategies to bring the confidence, joy, and even a little rock and roll swagger back to your life. Here's to finding your no matter what.
Ladies, one of the things that I hear about constantly is a struggle that we all have on this journey with hoping positive, but thinking negative. Those negative thoughts that quietly torment us as we move through our day on the journey. And while I've talked in the past about great ways to tame those negative thoughts, I thought it would be great to welcome Helen Adrian. And Helen Adrian is absolutely fantastic. I'm so happy to know her. And Helen has been in private practice since 1979, and she knows what she's talking about when it comes to struggling with infertility. She's the author of On Fertile Ground, which was published in 2011 as a number one bestseller on Amazon, and it is written for infertility patients and those who want to understand them. And I am so pleased to welcome Helen to the Love Your Journey podcast. And so welcome, Helen. Say hello to the ladies.
Hi, and thank you for that lovely introduction, Roseanne.
Thank you for being here. I'm so excited to have you here because I really want the ladies to get an introduction to how we can start to not only understand, but manage the negative thinking that can plague us on this journey. And I can tell you from having lived this journey myself that it was really, really easy to say, oh, yeah, you know, I'm really hopeful this cycle, you know, it's going to work this time, and, you know, I'd work myself up. But quietly, you know, when I, you know, had, you know, when I wasn't super focused on that, I would always hear this little voice kind of in the back of my mind saying, it's never going to work. You're fooling yourself. This is ridiculous. You're too old, and, you know, and all these other horrible things that would pop up and would instantaneously, Helen, snatch my joy away. What is it about this journey that brings this up?
Well, there are two components that I'd like to bring forward in answer to your question. The first one has to do with the fact that if you're humanoid, then you're going to be thinking negatively, period. If we didn't have the propensity to think negatively, or I should say if caveman didn't have the propensity to think negatively, we wouldn't be here because the twig that snapped might not be a raccoon. It might be a saber-toothed tiger. So there is that vigilance that is kind of rumbling underneath, and it manifests in what I like to call the maniac that lives inside each of our heads. That's just, I don't care if you're not dealing with infertility, you have a maniac inside your head, period. But now enter the infertility challenge, and that propensity ratchets up, exponentially. You described it so beautifully that you have the hopefulness going into an IVF or whatever your procedure might be, and then the voice. So if you can tame your inclination to judge yourself and be harsh with yourself by realizing that if you're a normal person, you're going to be inclined to think negatively. But that when it comes to infertility, there's a habit that builds and takes primacy because there are so many disappointments. And so you find that inclination to think negatively now has oxygen to fuel it, and it it's off and running. The good news is that there are ways to understand it, as you put it, and there's also ways to tame it, which is what we're going to get to, if not in this podcast, then in the class that's planned for October 16th to follow.
Yes. And you know what's so funny is, and I think that you really hit the nail on the head about, you know, this great imagery, this, you know, the that twig that's snapping, you know, it could be a saber-toothed tiger. And you know what's funny is when I was going through this journey, I was a trial attorney. And just by training, I was all focused on evidence. And I think one thing that I even see in my own clients as a coach is, you know, we get stuck in this idea that the only thing that exists is what's immediately, you know, like what we know from our past. You know, it failed last time. It's going to fail this time.
Right.
It was hard last time. It was miserable last time. So it's going to be miserable this time. It seems like, you know, what you were referring to is kind of that sort of rumination that we get into that, you know, this is how it's going to be. So how does that work, or what do you have to say about that?
Well, it is a mental habit that takes up residence and sits there as a bully. You know, it wants to be the same person on Tuesday that went to sleep on Monday. The idea is to understand that we live in a brain that has the capacity for change and the capacity for homeostasis or sameness. And the problem is that homeostasis has somewhat more power, and that in order to change, you need to rev up your engines and really discipline yourself to do the kinds of things that make for neuroplastic changes. The way that our brain is organized, we certainly can say, yes, I can, yes, I will, and so forth, but I really want your audience to know that resistance to change is normal, period. This is non-negotiable. That we may set out, it's just like, you know, New Year's resolutions, you know, oh, I'm going to whatever, right? By January 2nd, you forgot what the resolution was. That's the built-in resistance to change. So we really have to be mobilized. And, you know, certainly your energy as a coach and the way I've gotten to know you, you're absolutely the embodiment of the little engine that could. And what happens in the fertility challenge is it becomes the little engine that might, and then suddenly the little engine that might not, and before you know it, you're laying on the floor with your feet in the air like a dead cockroach thinking this is never going to happen.
When I see women make massive change in their lives, what I call turning the corner, and there's this, I mean, it's audible. When I'm working with women, I can definitely tell when it's about to happen. It becomes palpable. And it really seems like one of the key primers for that is engaging this relentless discipline. And it, you know, and so what do you think about that? Because, I mean, that's my observation. And it really seems like when you make, just like women on this journey make the conscious decision that they want their baby and they're not going to stop. That's the kind of thing that drives women to do, you know, ridiculous numbers of cycles, and I don't say ridiculous with judgment, it's just like a large number of, you know, lengths that we go to make this happen. I really believe that the same thing has to happen when it comes to deciding that this journey is not going to destroy your life and that you are going to be at the controls.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that has been universal with all of the women that I've worked with over the past 36 years is the drive to get to a goal, to enlarge your family, and then the difficulty sometimes that goes along with yet another obligation. another obligation. I have to be at the clinic at 6 o'clock in the morning. I have to take these shots. I have to eat that food. I have to go to the acupuncture. I have to. But what I would like to say is that in order to address the negativity and the heartache that, you know, where you're feeling the little engine that is dead on the tracks, you know, is that even though the things that you can do to keep yourself marching forward, when it's presented to you, it feels like, oh no, not another job. Ugh, another job. Right?
Mm-hmm,
and so just to break things down in so that it becomes really comprehensible and might be inspirational to the women who are listening to this, is that if you think about what's required here, it's about coping. There are two types of coping. One is problem solving, and that's a cognitive approach. It's pretty simple. Let's say the problem is, I'm not happy with what I'm hearing my doctor say to me. That's the problem. The solution is, get another opinion. You know, it's pretty straightforward. And that what I want to say in the class that we're going to do on the 16th is that what I'm going to teach is a behavioral approach that can really transform the negative thoughts that are going to come into your head if you're normal. That can't be changed. You can work with them, you can tame them, as you say, but they're going to come into your head, end of story. The other type of coping is called letting go coping. And while problem-solving coping engages the intellect, what can I do? It's action-oriented, right? The letting go coping is about allowing there to be a balance between doing and being. And that one of the things that happens is that when you're so busy doing, you forget, and maybe you didn't know in the first place, that the body needs time to just be. The indigenous tribes, they work whatever they do all day long, and then they sit around the campfire and they be. They sing, they dance, they drum, they tell stories. We've lost that. And what happens is that when we let go, the inclination for the mind to fly off into outer space because you're dealing with so much, and the body, which is just walking the planet like a zombie, the letting go techniques bring the mind and the body back as a unit. The behavioral approach to transforming negative thinking, I then combine with a letting go component so that you really get both aspects of coping rolled into one. So I'm really excited about, you know, teaching that.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I am so excited to be part of that as well, because I think that really what happens is, you know, particularly with professional women, and we're so used to achieving
right.
and being on a pretty rigorous schedule of, as you say, doing, that it feels like if we're not doing something and we get to a place of letting go, that that's giving up.
Well, that's a logical way to think, and it's also, pardon the my French, an ass-backwards way to think, because the body needs time to rejuvenate. And sometimes it is in the process of learning how to rejuvenate, how to engage the neuroplastic capacity of the brain to learn how to travel down different neural pathways. Sometimes just by engaging in these letting go coping mechanisms, people turn up pregnant. There's such a thing as trying too hard, you know?
Yeah, and you know what's interesting is I love what you were talking about, the neuropathways. It's kind of been a mild obsession of mine, is, you know, getting really interested in how the brain works, because I think the one thing that sometimes we don't understand is we can actually change our thought patterns. Like, we can actively change them, because some people, you know, they just don't think that this is possible for them. To change, you know, being trapped by negative thinking. I mean, what would you say to somebody who is feeling stuck and just feeling so bogged down under the weight of all this that thinks that they can't do it? What would you say?
Well, what I would say is that this is entirely possible, and I can explain a little bit about how the fly in the ointment is that there are, for many people, underlying belief systems that have to do with I'll never get pregnant. That needs to be addressed, but it can't be addressed in this segment because it's a separate phenomenon. But in terms of what you can do that might even undermine an underlying belief that's lurking is as follows. The way that the brain is organized, we have a brain stem, which is kind of like at the bottom of your head, the top of your neck. And that brain stem controls all of the autonomic functions like breathing and heart rate and muscle tone and blood pressure and, you know, that kind of thing. And then our cortex, which is the large part of the brain that developed, you know, phylogenetically as time went by, is to keep it very simple, it's how we interface with the world. It's what we see, how we think, what we decide. So the brain stem, let's call that the body, and then let's call the cortex the mind. Now, between those two, a midsection of the brain that's called the limbic system. And the limbic system has some pretty snazzy talents that make it possible to get to this place of changing how you think and how you behave. So if you take into consideration that the phenomenon that emanates from the autonomic nervous system, namely breathing, right, is the only autonomic function that's involuntary and also voluntary. So that if we decide or choose to breathe as if all is well with the world, namely long, slow, deep, the limbic brain does not know that you're not in a foxhole. In other words, if you're breathing as if you're relaxed, the limbic brain says, I'm safe, right?
Wow.
And then,
okay.
Yeah, and then as far as the mind is concerned, when you are using your mind, as we do when we listen to guided visualizations or when the people that I work with are working with me hypnotically, I can guide them to a place of safety, comfort, and relaxation. So some people like to, quote, travel in their mind, unquote, to a place that brings them solace. Let's just use the beach as an example, right? Now, the limbic brain, even though their mind is following my words, their limbic brain is receiving messages from the mind, and the limbic brain does not know that you are not where you imagine yourself to be. And so if you love the beach or a mountaintop or a hiking trail or, you know, wherever you get a sense of pleasure and relaxation, and I can give you the sensory imagery of being there, it's as if you are there. Now, the other thing that's really important about the limbic brain is that it cannot tell time. It's an internal set of organs. Right? So if you engage in something meditative, and meditative can be following your breath, there's so many different techniques. It can also be really paying attention to how you're making the salad for dinner. right? And you're really loving it, like, wow, this is a really crisp red pepper, yay, you know. And you're engaged in that for, you know, 10 minutes. As far as the limbic brain is concerned, it could be an hour, could be 2 hours, so that you have a chance to balance the way you knock yourself out all day long with all of your obligations in a relatively short period of time. The limbic brain also loves creativity and novelty. And so when I'm working with people hypnotically, I will often tell stories or metaphors that really are intriguing, in the same way that if you were to visualize a kindergarten class and all of the little children are sitting on the rug cross-legged and their teacher is on one of those short little chairs, right? All that teacher has to say is, once upon a time. And every kid's eyes glaze over, their mouth hangs open, and they are with the story, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They love the creative processes, and this contributes to the whole idea of mind-body letting go, because it brings relaxation. And when it brings relaxation, the best part is that the unconscious mind comes forward, and it can absorb what's called post-hypnotic suggestions, ideas and notions that keep going when you're back to writing a brief or doing some banking thing or being a medical doctor or whatever it is that women these days are engaged in. That the unconscious mind is smarter than the rest of us, and therefore it can be encouraged to seek internal resources and to seek resiliency and to seek the kind of thing that makes it possible to pull up your socks and go on with it.
You know, I see that in the women that I work with, but I also saw that in myself. It was really transformative to be able to, I called it acting as if, is kind of what I would, you know, like I sort of, you know, started to change the way that I thought about the journey and started to allow myself to not be confined by the evidence that it was immediately in front of me. The letting go process absolutely was included that kind of visualization, you know, visualizing the life that I really wanted to have and having that readily accessible when things got crazy, you know, and kind of going to that.
I guess it's
sort of like going to that place.
Yeah, I would call it fake it till you make it. And, you know, that's an approach that has incredible merit. The other thing about the journey, you just used the word evidence, and as a lawyer, that's what your training was. I can tell you that over the years, I have had so many women where the evidence was against them. And at this point in time, they're probably driving children to college.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, that the statistics drive people crazy. One of my former patients had something like a 5% chance of conceiving. Along came her daughter, and then she was given a 2% chance of conceiving, and along came her son. And evidence is fine, but sometimes if doctors really looked at the good news, they'd have to eat their hat without salt and pepper, because, you know, if you have a 2% chance, who's to say you're not going to be one of those two people? Who's to say?
Yeah, so what is it, you know, and I love that you brought that up, because there's an instantaneous, like when you say, you know, there's a 5% chance, we get so focused on the 95% chance that this isn't going to work. Why do you think that's the default? Like, why do we do that?
Well, let's ask the cavemen. I mean, it's just partly how we're wired. And then, as I said, the bully that takes up residence when there are repeated disappointments. What I like to do with people who have a choice that they don't know they have until we're in discussion, they have a choice to recognize that the voice in your head that just told you this is not going to work is that bully that you have a choice to say, now my mind is telling me this is not going to work, which immediately creates distance. Now it's not you inside this echo chamber of it's not going to work. It's you over here and noticing over there that that just happens to be what your mind said to you at any given moment. So the problem is that it's not that the negative thought, it's that people choose to believe the negative thought as if it were gospel truth. So what I like to do is I like to invite people to take a deep breath and to just settle down with the as-if presumption that they are their authentic selves and that their authentic self, like in your case, would be Roseanne, right? I then ask them to give the inner bully, the inner maniac, a different name, right? And they come up with some things that are absolutely hilarious, right? I don't know that I could say. I couldn't say some of them on in a podcast, let's put it that way. But sometimes they come up with names of, you know, relatives who they felt inspired, you know, or taught them this negativity and whatnot. Okay, so then what happens is that in our discussion, and they'll tell me, I just know this isn't going to work, blah, and they go off on this. And I can very simply say, is that Roseanne talking or is that the bitch talking?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
that's
boing,
so
you know. It really is. It just draws a line of demarcation between who you really are, that part of you that is motivated to act as if, to fake it till you make it, separates it from that voice in our head that is, we're hardwired for it. It's just part of the human condition. So let's just let it be there. You know, I often say to people, you know, how about if we invite that part of you to have a seat over there? Because you and I are busy. You know, we're busy trying to figure out how you can go forward.
Yeah, you know, and I love that you're highlighting that, because what that really underscores is how actively aware you must be. Because otherwise that, you know, I call it a saboteur, you know, this sabotage. Mm-hmm. You know, I always, you know, I like to think of it as this person that just comes in and just rains on your parade, you know, this negative thinking, the self-sabotage that we engage in, that the moment we start to feel good, there's that thing that comes up that says, oh, no, you can't feel good, you can't be hopeful because of everything that's happened in the past.
Nothing can change without awareness, period. And you know, that's why this, the way I look at this journey is that, yes, the goal is to get a child, for sure. There's no question about that. But since it is such a monumental challenge, it's also an opportunity for enormous growth. Build self-awareness so that you can know who you are and how you respond to stress, which then allows for adaptation. That's the three A's: accept, aware, adapt. You need these little sayings or whatever you want to call them to continue to be inspired along the way. Every day you need something else that kind of gives you a jolt of, yes, I can.
Right. And, you know, and I love that you're saying that, because, you know, when initially I talk to people, or when people ask about, you know, sometimes they call them mantras, sometimes they call them affirmations. I always tell people that, you know, affirmations and mantras are great, but they're absolutely useless if you're unwilling to engage that part of yourself that actually believes them.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I have a very interesting little tidbit along those lines. One woman that I worked with, I actually wrote about her in my book. She was famous to herself as a negative thinker. She was very well aware that this is something that predated the fertility struggle. And so I taught her how to transform negative thinking into affirmations. So she was convinced she would never get pregnant. She got pregnant. She was convinced she would never carry to term. She carried to term. She was convinced she could never hatch this baby, as she put it. Of course, gave birth, la-di-da. She was convinced she could never breastfeed. I mean, all the whatever, whatevers. But along the way, she worked with herself. And whenever she had a negative thought, she used what I taught her to turn it into an affirmation. And she would, if need be, get up in the middle of the night, go to her computer, and type the affirmation over and over and over and over and over again. And by the time her son was born, she had printed out 400 pages of her effort to get a grip on her inclination to think negatively.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. My goodness. Now, that is some discipline. I mean, that is definitely somebody who wants to change.
Yeah.
Somebody who wants to change. And, you know, and it's so fantastic that I think that we're underscoring this, because I didn't believe it when I first started down this path. Like, I thought that this kind of work was for, you know, hippy-dippy types that, you know, had time to be in the clouds, you know, because that's just the world that I came from. And so many women are in this place that they just don't think this is possible. But I think that really engaging the best part of yourself and inviting that best part of yourself to help you through this, and to really take the controls back from that bully and take the controls back from the saboteur, and really stand in what you know to be true. And you know that you know, even the word infertility, I think, has kind of it has baggage, it has some, you know, negative connotations and all these things. But, you know, make it something different. Make it what you want it to be. Call it what you want. And, you know, and really take initiative on the journey to not just be kicked around by it, but to be an active participant at all levels.
If you can indoctrinate yourself with things that really have meaning for you, you know, I am going to XYZ because I want this baby, and whatever it is, just believe in it, take it to heart, type it over and over for 400 pages, you know, you know, eat it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, make it part of every cell in your body. It takes work. It takes work. And I really want to emphasize that resistance is normal. What I like to say is that if you engage in the kind of coping, or I should say, if you make time to engage in the kind of coping that can make a difference, then you can be content to say to yourself, I've done everything in my power. And at the same time, your message is really important. Don't abandon a month, a year, 5 years of your life by never smiling, never laughing, never having fun, never being in a joyous situation, even though it's a heartache to be in this challenge, this uphill challenge, and have all the concerns about, will I ever get there?
That's such gold, because, you know, I mean, that's my battle cry. I mean, I think my ladies know my no matter what battle cry, because it's so easy to get swept away by all this journey has to offer, that you become myopic and single, you know, have a single focus on having the baby. But as in anything, as you were basically saying, I mean, there are no guarantees. So the question is, how do you want to live in this process?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Exactly. How do you want your life to be? You know, is it going to be dictated by, you know, I mean, isn't that part of the roller coaster, right? I mean, you know, our happiness and our hope goes up and down based on a pregnancy test or based on a test result of some other kind. And, you know, it's with discipline, with awareness, and with work and the techniques that you are sharing, you can absolutely transcend that and enjoy your life now.
Yeah. And by the way, laughter is medicine.
Yeah, I have no doubt. I have no doubt about that. And and we're going to be digging into this topic more deeply on October 16th, Friday, October 16th. I'm so excited that Helen and I are going to, it's going to be so fun. We're going to be doing a two-hour intensive teleclass together called Tame Negative Thinking on Your Fertility Journey. And we're really going to be digging even deeper into the subject. And most importantly, through that digging, we're going to be featuring Helen's techniques for really creating a customized and easily accessible toolkit and series of strategies for dealing with negative thinking and finding a way to really pull yourself up by your bootstraps and take control of the negative thoughts so that they don't torment you. And in addition to that, I'm going to be coaching alongside Helen, and you're going to have an opportunity during this two-hour intensive course to ask questions, to get personalized coaching about how to implement these things and how to really create firm structures for following through. Because Helen said something that was so important just a while ago. We all make resolutions on January 1st, but by January 2nd, we forget. And we have no idea what they were by March 31st. They were distant memories. So if you really want to take some active control of your negative thinking and really change the way that you approach your journey, you're definitely going to want to join us on Friday, October 16th, and that's going to be a two-hour teleclass. So it doesn't matter where in the world you are, you can absolutely join us from 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time or 12 noon Eastern Standard Time. Bottom line, two-hour class starts at 9 a.m. Friday, October 16th. And the good news here is that if you are not able to join us live, you can join us through a replay. So signing up for the class gives you access to the replay and all of the great materials that we're going to include as part of the class to support you through this process. So,
okay, thank you.
Great, Helen, and thank you.
I agree.
Thank you for beginning to shed some light on negative thinking and really giving a great explanation of where it comes from, and you know, and how we can start to get control of it, and for being part of the solution. So, thank you so much.
I'm thrilled to be teamed up with you, Roseanne.
Oh, thank you so much, Helen.
Ladies, I hope you love this week's podcast. And don't forget, sign up for the special two-hour intensive teleclass that Helen and I are presenting on Friday, October 16th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time and 12 noon to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We would love to have you. And you can sign up at www.frommaybetobaby.com/tame-negative-thinking. I am wishing you more joy than you can possibly stand this week on your journey, ladies. Thank you for tuning in to the Love Your Journey podcast.